Welcome to AmiSites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. Join the founder and CEO of Multifunding, Ami Kassar, and his co-host, Lynn Ozer, the president of Multifunding, aka the SBA Queen, as they help you navigate, grow, and stay in control of your business.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next edition of AmiSites. I'm Ami Kassar, your host, along with my co-host, Lynn Ozer, aka SBA Queen. Very happy to have Chris Hutchinson on the phone. Chris Hutchinson is going to share with us a lot about his journey, where he came from, where he is, and now how he's helping leadership teams evolve and grow their companies. Chris, from the balmy Colorado, where you are, where you're about to get 26 inches of snow, you tell me. I hope you're warm today.
Woo! So far, so good. It feels good here, and maybe that's more in the mountains. Hopefully, we won't get quite that hammered.
Do you live in Denver or Boulder or where?
About an hour north of Denver. It's Fort Collins, near the Wyoming border. So
Chris, why don't you just maybe start and just tell us a little bit about your story and your background?
Sure. Well, I'm really happy to be here. And I think it's neat to hear entrepreneurs coming from every sector of the workforce and people who say, hey, I think there's a better way, or you know, I want to go make a dent in the universe that perhaps staying inside an organization might not let me do. So the short version. So when I went through college, I was an aerospace engineering major, switched over to mechanical, and I got into the Air Force because I was ROTC. My wife and I both were commissioned and went to Oklahoma City. And I was pretty excited about that because my dad was in the Air Force and I saw the idea of there's a mission bigger than me. I'm here to support that and each other. And it really created a huge sense of camaraderie and sort of shared purpose. And I really was attracted to that. I will tell you, on my first job, I was like, what am I doing? Because it was kind of the classic, keep your head down, you know, messengers get shot, stay in the tall grass, cover your ass. It was a really what now people would say is a toxic environment. And it just was totally different from what I thought it was going to be. So I was actually depressed. Like 6-8 months in, I'm like, I don't like to go into work. I'm not using my skills. What am I doing here? This is a 4-year sentence, not a 4-year return of commitment.
Wow.
And luckily I was, you know, because they change things in big organizations like the Air Force, I got to be on a different team. And it was day where the other one was night. People were helping each other. It was like, hey, that's your kryptonite. It's my superpower. Let me grab that for you. What are your thoughts? Let's put it all on the table. And after 3 or 4 months of that, I bounced into work every day. I felt like I was using all my strengths and they were enabled and like there was a synergy between me and everybody else. The actual fact is the different team I was on only had one person different, the leader. And it completely, I mean, everybody changed in how they interacted with each other and how we were seeing the mission and how we were enabled to be our best selves. And I'm like, okay, as a great engineer, I thought, on team A, life sucks. On team B, it's awesome. And so that really started my journey, even as I was an officer. And I went, you know, it's like, you can be a leadership position and not be a leader. So I was learning about how do I enable the best within each other? How do we get clarity on what the mission is? And all have line of sight to that. And then we're working together to try experiments and do things. You can hear entrepreneur right there, right? Yeah. So I was able to have a very entrepreneurial experience in the Air Force, a lot of support. And 8 years later, I stepped out and went from having 350 people working for me into corporate America, where I was a process engineer in a chip manufacturing plant and tried to do the same thing where people didn't have to do what I said because I wasn't legally in charge, right? But I was able to do basically the same things worked. The same things were what people wanted. I want to matter. I want to know how I can connect. I want to know how to use my strengths. I want to have clarity where we're going. And I want the leader to enable the best within all of us. And I want to do the same for that person. And so about 2002, in fact, February of 2002, I started this company because I was in a division of Motorola as one of the senior leaders. And our CEO took us from 3,500 people to 20 in 18 months. Not 20,000, 20. There was a tech downturn, but there were some huge leadership faults. And they basically, we got more of team A. People were out fighting for each other and it was scarcity and all that kind of stuff. So 22 years ago, last month, I started this organization to enable the best within people, not in a fuzzy, rosy, you know, unicorns and butterflies way, like when we can trust each other, work together really effectively, leaders can show up in a way that helps people get clarity and able to do the right things, we can do anything. And so I've getting to do that with clients. We have a 6-person team. We're in Fort Collins, Colorado. Get to go all over the world, mostly the United States, to help organizations, really leaders and teams, work better together.
So you were one of the ones who was downsized. Is that the point?
Yes, it was. Luckily, my previous boss got me to a level where I got a year severance, which was unbelievably helpful. And it did. It took me more than a year to figure this out. But my wife was an angel investor that had benefits and kept us eating. So I could take a few years to figure out how the heck to do this entrepreneurial thing outside of an organization.
Were you thinking about doing it before you actually had to do something else? Or was this something that was brewing in you while, you know, you were working there?
I think that's a great question, Lynn, because it was brewing. In fact, I didn't even realize, I don't know if I was slow or just kind of caught up in, I didn't want to worry about what I had to go do to get work. I wanted to invest everything in the organization I was in. And at one point near the end, when things were looking bleak in that 3,500 person company, you know, plummeting to 20, we were like 250 or 300. I had this line of people that would come up to my door and they'd knock on it and they'd open the door. They look both ways. They'd close it and they'd come in and say, look, Chris, you're the director of quality. But I've heard people say that when they have a conversation with you and the questions you ask, they get a lot clearer about what's really important and what they need to do. Would you be willing to do that with me? And I was like, well, quality is everything. So of course, everything, you know, I can do it for anybody, right? But I was coaching then. I didn't realize it because it wasn't my solution. It was, how do I help them? So the thing that I had to do was, after I'd left the confines of the company, which give you security, I don't have to look for work, but they also hem you in, that the same thing was happening. I just took it outside and wanted to do it for more people and have a little bit, you know, not have one client.
Right.
Which is my employer.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So that's great. So you said it took you about a year to get started.
It probably took
about that journey.
Yeah, it was about 2 years. I think one of the things that was really challenging, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs fall into this bucket where they're like, you just build the great thing and then people will buy it. Like it's about the perfection of the thing you're doing, not how does that connect to people's needs. Now, luckily I had been in roles where that people's needs were really vital for them to buy in. And so over that time, I got some training and I also went out there and just stumbled and fell a lot to figure out my methodology and my teams is, how do we help people buy our help? We are partners from day one. We're not a consultant that says, you're stupid if you don't do this, I have to do this to you. And we're not just a hired pair of hands that says, what do you want us to do? We'll just do it. We are partnering and doing things with people. And so having that shared experience, it took me a while to figure that out because there's a lot of advice says, well, just be the expert and tell people what to do, or just do work for people and you have business. I think the partnership model is really important. So I had to learn how do I ask questions in a way people get that we're partners, you know, and I put little quotes around it. It's not like formal legal partners, but it's like, I'm here to help you and the organization. What do we need to explore? What does great look like? What's working well? Two first things. And then what's not working well and how might we help is a totally different thing than don't you need the service? Is there something that you don't understand or do I have to teach you? You know, which a lot of people, unfortunately, with I think a lot of desire to help can just sort of say, you know, your problem is the lack of my help. I had a coach that said, the lack of your solution is never a problem for the client. It's what they're trying to get to and what's holding them back. That's where you can help them best. I think you guys do that too. I think in terms of it has to be a goal for them to want to fund something, right?
Give us maybe an example of a favorite client, if there's such a thing. Maybe you can't disclose their name, but
sure,
what an engagement looks like, what you do, and kind of what results you've seen that are particularly satisfying to you.
Awesome. That's a great question. And everyone's different. So that one thing I kind of like is it's not cookie cutter. It's not like, oh, you need X kind of thing. I'll talk about a client that showed up and they had a partnership of three people and they were looking to grow. And they said, we need to figure out how do we create a leadership team out of the people that right now are managers. They're folks that don't have that higher level responsibility. We need them to work together rather than going through us because they're always coming to us with problems. How do we build that? And so we started out with working with the individuals and saying, okay, we're going to get together for 3 days. Nothing magic about 3 days, but really experientially, how can we lean in on each other's strengths and know them better? How do we have disagreement that actually serves us rather than disagreement is like being disloyal. Right? No, we need to get disagreements out on the table so that whatever we're talking about, we're deeply committed to, we hold each other accountable, and we get better results than any silo would. So it was a lot of leadership development at the same time as it was team development. At the same time, it was, where are we going? So those three together, you could do them separately, but doing them simultaneously is this, there's this multiplier effect. So we do that. The team starts going, they have stumbles. You know, some of the members, leadership wasn't their thing and they did their best. And then they stepped down into another role and that was okay. No harm, no foul. So then, you know, we did that for a few days. We get back together in a month. Hey, those were great commitments. How much are we honoring them? It's okay. We can, you know, that one we can't honor, we'll strike it. We're not going to commit to that anymore. Or do we double down? And what are we doing well? So helping that, meanwhile, coaching the leader or leaders so that they can make the space for the team to step up. Because if the leader doesn't change, you could train people all day long. It's not going to make a difference. And I don't think of it as training. We're kind of co-developing. So that layer of the organization grew pretty well. And people got established to the point where in 5 years or so, and we were doing some, you know, a vision retreat, some work on how do we help, let's say, the customer service, the salespeople, and the folks that are actually doing the vendor management, not see themselves as enemies, but actually team members. You know, those kind of things, because they can be like, wow, the salespeople, right? How are we on the same team? So some of those kind of things. And 5 years later, they're breaking off. These leaders are actually breaking off into subordinate organizations, which are now basically the person's a CEO with other people they're developing. And you can see this opportunity developing because of not only the way they work together, but because of what they defined as their values that they lived out, not a plaque on the wall, how they treated each other and how they really supported each other in that. So it's been, I was thinking, I think it's been 14 years since we started working with them. And they're just continuing to go. And we hear from them every so often, hey, could you support us through this little thing? We found a crevice. We're going to build a little bridge over it. We would like your help to figure out what's best. And I think that's just, it's so much fun to see people grow and develop and companies grow and develop over time.
Well, that's interesting. So is it typical that you would have a client for years because of that? Or do more of your clients need you and then you don't hear from them?
Yeah, I think I really like having long-term relationships and short-term engagements. I believe there's a lot of capacity in people that we're helping unlock, and then we work ourselves out of a job, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, we stay connected, and we also don't say, hey, you want to do some team building? We're like, if that team building went great, what's the goal out of it? And I mean, I think if people just think of it as an activity you go do, you get very different results than this is a thing we're going to try to create the company we're trying to build here. Right. And so having that clarity of where we're going, then you pull in whatever methodologies you need. Do we need funding? Do we need leadership growth? Do we need process improvement? You know, all those things matter only if you have, what are we trying to do here? What dent are we making in the universe?
So when you work with the leaders and they identify the things that they need, does your team provide those services for them, or you point them to vendors that do those types of things that they need?
It depends. They surface what they need. And some of those things are things that we do. Like they have leaders that are struggling with the responsibility, or they've kind of maybe got promoted early, or there's a big gap between the leaders and the next step. You know, how do we sort of close that gap? There are times when it's sort of like they're talking about things, and we have given referrals to folks just saying, well, here's some other services. We try to give a few options because we don't know what's going to work. Here's some people you can talk to about this. Here's some people you can talk about that. But for the most part, I actually have a kind of a thrill, and I've not been proven wrong yet, is when I walk into a room with a bunch of leaders, my team and I are doing this, and I say, you know, I firmly believe that what you need is in the room right here, right now. You have all the strategy you need. You have all the thoughts you need. You may need to go get some more help, but if we can unlock this here, you have everything you need.
Chris, who's on your team?
So I have three people who are doing what we call advisor work. That's attracting clients and helping them buy help and then providing the support to go do that. We have three other people who are behind the scenes that do all the, you know, make the invoices go and making all our work do well. So we have Gurdev Khalsa is a fellow. He's a bit senior to me and he has incredible experience. Used to be a CPA. Now he's a coach and a facilitator. Does great. Erin Hottenstein is, I think she's been a number of things, but one of them is an investigative reporter. And found out she really loved the stories and helping people to sort of advance their stories. So we have different qualities, different superpowers. My wife, Diana, is the CFO and COO, and she keeps really everything running along with Anastasia Eichler, who's kind of the chief scheduler. And then we have Katie Huey, who does a lot of the marketing and tried to help figure out how can we connect people with the challenges and the possible next steps. And then if that involves us, great.
How do you and your wife manage to work together?
You know, we've been married for 37 years and we work together extremely well. I know there's people like, I would never do that. We've actually even done some couples coaching on like, because entrepreneurs frequently bring their spouse into the organization. A couple of things. We're very clear about, I'm not dad and she's mom. This is not it. We are all adults working together here. We play different roles. And then also, I think even though, yes, of course, the work kind of spills over and we'll have a conversation, walk around the block is, okay, how do we deal with this challenge? Or, you know, we're a little bit low right now in revenue. Like, you know, we have way more capacity than we're using. How do we help enable that without pushing anything on clients? Because that's not what we do. But I think it's a lot of communication, a culture that says we care about each other and we'll challenge and support each other. And then that we're willing to hear when things aren't working well, because that's key. If people can't give us feedback, hey, feels like you're conspiring, or we're hearing about decisions after the fact. One other thing, Ami and Lynn both, we have completely open book. There are line items with our salaries and including Diana's and my dividend. So line item per person, because although that was uncomfortable to start with, it's been a godsend. It's very clear. People know who's making what and why. And last year, we took a 4-month sabbatical, Diane and I, and the company kept on going.
Where did you go? What did you do?
Wow.
Well, we've heard people over planning sabbaticals, so we underplanned ours. We planned a week in New Mexico, and I could give you this long list of all these amazing, you know, synchronicities of things that opened up 2 days before we needed to go. And we ended up spending 3 weeks in New Mexico. We spent a couple of weeks back in, I used to live in DC, and we spent around Maryland and DC area with some friends. And then we went to Hawaii and ended up actually volunteering. I mean, we're not a consumer visitor, tourist kind of thing. We're like, we want to be part of what's happening. And we ended up going to the island of Molokai. You'd never been there. Planted native trees, helped rebuild a 800-year-old fish pond. I mean, we just got to do some really, really cool stuff. And it all was like the day before, oh, what about this? What about that? So it was a beautiful exercise in being open to what's next.
Wow. That's amazing. So people really struggle with walking away from their business like that, the two of you. How did you know it was okay to do that?
Well, we did a lot of pre-work, Lynn. We did work. So we used a RASCI model that says who's responsible and accountable, consulting, supporting, and informed about all the high-level and low-level decisions. So everybody knew, and we were using that for months. The books are all open. We also made sure that, but we used a great game of business variance. So we're forecasting all the time. So we're saying, okay, here's what we want this to be in terms of the calls we make and the connections we have. And we're all working towards those forecasts. And then if it doesn't quite get where we want, what do we do different next time? So we're very much a learning organization where all that learning's on, you know, it's visible. It's not like in the back of my head. So I felt pretty confident that people knew how to make decisions. And 4 months was long enough that they couldn't just tie a rope over to the yoke and say, he'll be back. We'll just, you know, they'll be back. We'll just go sit in the back. And, you know, they had to get in and fly the plane.
Right. It's a little scary.
It was pretty fun. I'm very, very proud. I didn't ever check my email. They checked my email and if it was personal, they put it in a folder for me. And that's what I looked at. And I never checked the metrics.
Amazing.
Because I knew they knew what was right. And we talked about with the contingencies. And if something went wrong, they knew when they would call us. And they didn't, because they were able to handle it.
Did they call?
They only called once. And it wasn't around the business effort. I got a call that said, it was about midway, 2 months in. And they said, you know, we're having this very tricky situation with the client. And we wanted to have you to bounce things off. Can we have lunch with you? And I'm like, oh, totally in. You know, like if they're asking me for some support, great. But I was not going to intrude on their experiment and them. Because as soon as I started looking, I knew it would be like, oh, well, he's got it, so I don't have to worry about it.
What did you learn through the whole thing?
There were some really powerful lessons. It's going to sound kind of like a duh. And it's actually a fundamental. I think this is what happens when you go on sabbatical, is you can really step away and let things exist in a bigger picture. So the thing that I learned was, in addition to some extended family challenges, we have a 40-acre retreat that burned up a few years ago in one of the fires that came through Colorado. And so it's been, there's a lot of mourning and difficulty in my extended family around that. And we're struggling, I think, still trying to figure out how do we work together managing a place that's just a bunch of burned trees. And the cabins that I built with my grandfather by hand and the other cabins, they're all gone. Very hard. But I really learned this key thing, or I learned that up until recently, and it's still a hole that I could fall into, I was programmed that agreement, basically belonging required agreement. If you disagree, you don't belong. And so I would try to figure out how I could agree as much as I could, because I didn't want to get not belonging, rather than this other thing that I'm really trying to embrace as best I can is we belong regardless of how much we agree with each other. It's just really important for me to do that, for my family, for our team, you know, like, hey, you belong here, even when you disagree with me, because we need to have that information and do those things together. And I'm not going to change the country. I wish we would embrace that, you know, that we all belong here, even when we disagree versus, you know, can we just cut us in half and let those other people go out on a knife flow or something? I think we desperately need to be able to disagree and still feel connected and belonging and mattering.
How did your clients react to you going away for 4 months?
There was one thing that I did not expect. They were actually all supportive. They were like, oh man, I wish I could do that. You know, that was usually the thing, you know, God, that would be amazing. I'll never be able to do that. I'm like, well, you probably could. A lot of them, the part I planned for was because I do a fair amount of the delivery that we would lose revenue. And we predicted it and said it would be this much over the 3 months. And essentially there was a little gauge. And if that gauge went down faster than the time expired, that was when we'd get a call. Didn't get a call. It worked. The thing I didn't think about is we don't wait for clients to come tell us what they want. We connect with our clients and say, how's it going and what's next for you? And that's where we find our opportunities. Not having that conversation for 4 months meant I started over in those conversations. So it wasn't boom, I walked back into work. It was, at least for all of us, it was a slower ramp back up. So that's something, if I do it again, I would have planned more for. Again, we don't have a 2-for-1, you know, extra order of leadership coaching on the side for free kind of offers. It's really driven by client needs, not by what we need.
Chris, is there like a methodology that you guys are close to or people would know about, or do you kind of do your own thing?
So I think it's really, there's a custom thing. There's some methodology. One of the things, and if people are familiar with Patrick Lencioni's 5 dysfunctions of a team, it's like a little pyramid, has these little levels in it. I kind of walked through those. That's fundamentally what we find with organizations that are going even from good to great. There's not enough psychological safety for people to, or trust, for people to disagree, put things on the table, which means when we do commit, we get better results. And then that peer accountability thing is a foreign thing for a lot of people. They're like, you're the boss, that's your job. Instead of I need to go, like if I've committed to something for the team, I need a team member to come up and, hey, Chris, it's been 3 weeks. We can't move forward without that report or thing you're doing. What can I take off your plate? Because that's accountability. People tend to think accountability is only punitive, but it's actually, look, we all got to get there together. How can I help you? So that's one of the things we do. All our assessments, and I know you were talking about assessments the other day, are very carefully made not to label people. Rather than, well, I'm a this, so that's the way it is. You know, that's the way those people act. We feel that people need to know their strengths so that they can decide how much to contribute them. Because more often than not, the weaknesses are overdone strengths. There's something that's been great for a while, and now it's not helpful. So if I'm just this strength, oh, well, that's what you get, versus saying, I have this strength. How do I consciously bring what I need to this situation? Because I could bring too little or too much. Either one would not be helpful. The right amount, Goldilocks style, would be what I need to bring. And I'm the only person who can do that.
Do you travel a lot?
I'd like to be around a quarter travel. Lately, I've been doing a lot more. I talked to you about us being a little bit down. We're still investing and trying to figure out how do we reach people that are sort of doing okay and see that they could be better. Maybe, you know, as you know, almost nobody who's a entrepreneur said, I'm in it for the leadership. They're just trying to like make something work. And then what do you mean I have responsibility for how people are acting with each other? What the hell is that? You know? Or they're a technical expert that's gotten promoted into a leadership position. And they're like, what is this people stuff, right? So those are situations where frequently we find that some small amount of support, if the person has the right intentions of like, let's make this work together, give really big results. And then the other places with teams where people are siloing, that's actually usually a symptom of that there's nothing bigger than my silo. Because if there's nothing bigger than the silo, my job says, take care of this versus I'm part of a company. This is my leadership level of authority. By the way, I have finances. they're like, I'm CFO, so I make sure we don't spend too much money. And that's my job. No, no, you're here to enable the best work in the company. So how are you going to do that? I don't know. Did that answer the question? I'm not sure.
Yeah, do you ever partner up with other coaching or other coaching organizations?
Yes, we have some. And it's really important for us that they're philosophically and values aligned, because some people, again, they do things to people. We especially have, we've been doing more work around sort of how do we embrace the diversity of the people that are here and increase that so we get better results and we, you know, things that we wouldn't expect. So we have some folks who are really good at diversity and they come along with us to help enable that in organizations. I've got somebody who's an expert in the theory of constraints. I don't know if you heard about that, but it's a kind of a manufacturing idea where you try to figure out where you're getting throttled, you fix that, and then you go to the next place. It's like playing on a, you know, on a rainy day in a gutter. You know, you go to where the sticks are and pull them apart, but there's a lot more technical stuff. So if that's the kind of issue, we'll go alongside, because it's not only the process, it's also how people embrace it. Because if they don't own it and you're telling them they're stupid, they'll prove you wrong. Because they won't do what you said they got to do.
And Chris, just for the benefit of our listeners, is there a typical company size you'd like to work with?
I really love working with between 50 and 250 people, because it's kind of a lump. You know, everybody can look around and knows each other. Sometimes it's a division of a company. They'll usually have enough resources to be able to bring us in, but also they have enough resources and the challenges because they're big enough. If they're really big, I take pride in sometimes when we're going into very large companies, we get to beat out the free supplied help because it's not very helpful. And so that's, you know, it's cool when we get to do that. I mean, I don't want to brag, but it's kind of cool when they're like, we want you and we have to pay for you. And these other folks are free, but they're not able to, they're stuck in the structure. We need to step out of that.
Do you find that you need to be there on site to be effective? You said you travel a lot. Technology isn't the way to do it.
Well, that's a big, it depends. So when the COVID happened 4 years ago, like two days from now, right?
Yeah.
When COVID happened, I was sitting in the Colorado State University president's office. We had this huge project planned and she got a call from our county health advisor said, we're shutting you down. You know, so it was like, I went back and I'm not the, here's what we're doing, but I said, we have got to figure out how to make the same impact online that we do in person. And so I think we made that pivot really well. It is always easier in person because there's just, you know, there's human nature and connection. You can't get it through a little box. That said, we've done things where wholly online companies, if that's the basis, it can work pretty well. Awesome. Ideally, when we're doing this trust building, we got to be in person. And it's not because we're doing trust falls. It's because I got to see, you know, what's your body language and more than just your shoulders. And then I can say, okay, we're on the same team. I'm going to tell you something that's uncomfortable that you need to know, because that spinach in your teeth is distracting everybody all the time. You know,
do you ever work with forums?
Forums, like, you mean in terms of like Vistage and stuff like that?
EO or YPO or Vistage?
I have. I'm going to claim that I have not figured out how to make that work for our business, because frequently the chairs are ones that say, thank you for those tools. I've got it. Because we're working with universal tools. I think it's the way we do it that makes a difference. I'm happy to give those tools away, but it is fun to see groups really embrace how can we be better in a way. So that's a great question. I haven't found it a way to expand the business. I love that we make impact when we go talk to people.
Chris, where can people find you or find your company?
So there's two places, trebuchetgroup.com. So that's I'm sorry, TREBUCHET group.com, which, yes, that's an ancient medieval war engine, but it was extremely simple and it basically broke down a lot of silos and had people working together because they had to. You couldn't just hide up in a castle and say, I'm not going to talk to you. You know, we had to work together. So there's some cool history there. I wrote a book called Ripple, which is a field manual for leadership that works, a number of years ago, and really do it yourself. Like, how do you become a better leader at any level in an organization? And that's at rippleleader.com. So, and the ripple effect is around, you know, the thing you do, I do something with you, we combine to do something with the organization. That effect keeps kind of skipping out like a stone on water and to your clients and our, you know, the next clients and next clients. And it's that energy in the ripples that makes the difference for the organization to keep going.
I'm just curious, who usually contacts you in a business of 50 to 250 people? Is it the CEO of the company that realizes that they need this leadership? Or is it someone on their team that brings it to their attention and they say, yeah, go ahead and do it. I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's, Lynn, that is a wise question. Usually it's the CEO and, or, you know, if there's a couple, like a pair, like COO, CEO, they kind of say, we think there are better results possible. We're not figuring out how to do that. Let's reach out and find out what's possible. That works great. Sometimes it's HR saying, we're having a team that's struggling and I'm trying to help a leader and they haven't had a lot of experience. Maybe they need some leadership development as well as helping the team at the same time.
Got it.
And if we've had a connection to anybody in the organization, or frequently, sometimes we'll get where somebody will leave one organization, go to another and said, that thing you did back there, we need it over here because it step changed the organization. We were at a different level when we were done with that 3-month engagement and we kept going. Right. So it is a little tricky. You don't want to walk into somebody's office and say, Ami, you know, I think you need some leadership coaching. I got somebody you should talk to. That doesn't go well, you know? So more it's like, hey, are you seeing these things? Let's have a conversation and see if there's something we can do. It's completely open hand. Because I think you do that well, too. You're not like, this is the solution. Don't you agree? It's, what are you doing? And what are you hoping for? And how might we support that?
Awesome. Chris, I love it. Thank you so much. Great conversation. Great insights. I'm sure our listeners are going to look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you both for having me here. I appreciate
it. Thanks. That was great talking to you.
Thanks for joining us today on AmiSites. Since 2010, multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with a network of the nation's top lenders. Visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.